There are great Kabbalists in internet, and of course I'm being sarcastic, that explain to you all the incredible mystical and spiritual things and levels that a person accomplishes when he's doing a commandment, a mitzvah, down here in the world. And when I mean a person, I mean a non-Jew. What does that mean? They talk about the level of malchus and kingship of God and so and they rampant and small faces and everything that happens when actually a person does this and that action. The truth is that it is not truth, it's a lie. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work. And I'm going to explain to you this in two different ways, two different angles, which actually are the same, but it's just two different angles. One angle is a story in the Torah itself. And the second angle is the mystical teachings of Hasidus, the Hasidic movement that are based on Kabbalah, that show you why and how does this actually work. So let's go first perspective. There's a story in the Torah. In the second book of the Torah, book of Shmois, Parshas Kisisa, in chapter 33, actually the verse 16. The story, you can go read it, but basically the Jewish people did a golden calf, they did idolatry, and God was very angry, etc. Moshe Rabbeinu was praying to God to forgive the Jewish people. And within all this interaction, prayer between God and Moshe Rabbeinu, one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu says is, how am I going to know that I actually found grace upon your eyes, on your eyes, if it is not by you, God, yourself, coming with us from the land of Egypt to the land of Canaan to transform it into the land of Israel? And there's a key word, I'm going to say it in Hebrew, veniflinu, on purpose, I'm not translating, veniflinu, whatever that means, just a second, I'll explain, veniflinu, me, says Moshe, and your people, the Jewish people, from all the other nations in the face of the world. What is this word niflinu means? So the classical commentaries on the Torah, that means Rashi, that means Ibn Ezra, that means Ramban, they all translate the same thing actually based on the Talmud. And you can see the sources to every single word that I'm saying in the description actually of the class. The Talmud explains what Moshe Rabbeinu actually asked God was to be separated from all the rest of the people in the world in one particular aspect, in the aspect of the godly presence residing in the Jewish people and not in the rest of the world. This is something that God not only accepted, but he actually said he accepted. If you look in the story, in chapter 34 of the same book, book of Shmois, in the same parsha, Parshas Kisisa, actually God concedes this to Moshe, and he says in verse 10, he will make a covenant with us, and part of that covenant is Eesen Niflois. I will do, people translate wonders, but actually the word Niflois is directly related to the word Veniflinu. That means that God conceded Moshe Rabbeinu not to put his presence into non-Jews. Now you're going to ask me, wait a second, there were non-Jews that were actually prophets. Like Adam HaRishon, the first man, was a prophet, Noach was a prophet, and then Shem, the son of Noach, was a prophet, Abel was a prophet, to the point that the Torah itself says that when Rivka, the wife of Yitzchak, was pregnant and she was actually suffering, she went to see God, so to speak. That the verse says that. And what does it mean, God? Rashi himself explains he went to see Shem and Aver, that were prophets on those times. However, that story happened before Moshe Rabbeinu actually asked God to remove his presence from the non-Jews and to keep it just for the Jews. And this is what actually happened. And if you're going to ask me, wait a second, Bilam was a non-Jew and he was a prophet. And this story happened actually later in the story, in the chronicles of the scriptures. And Rashi explains clearly, based on the Talmud also, that Bilam did not receive prophecy just as any other prophet. Rather, he was a non-Jew and he received prophecy through an angel. So there's some kind of relationship? Yes, of course, there is. That's why God actually commanded seven specific ideas on the non-Jews with all the ramifications they have, things you have to do, things you don't have to do, etc. So there is a relationship, of course. But what I'm saying is that his presence, according to what these commentaries say, this story, the Talmud says, etc., does not reside on non-Jews. So let's go to the second perspective to explain this same thing, but in a deeper level. Why is it, actually, that this doesn't happen? This relationship, this part of the relationship, it's not on non-Jews. So in order to understand this, we have to understand first a classical rule found in Kabbalah, in Jewish mysticism. There's a rule, I'm going to say this in Aramaic, and then I'm going to translate it. There's a rule called Isarusa dele Tatoe, Isarusa dele Eilo. An awakening from below, that means something a person actually does, an action in this physical world, generates an awakening above. That means that every single commandment, mitzvah, that a person does down here has an effect up there. Why? Because God wants it so. And our awakening generates an awakening by God. And that awakening means energy being brought down into this world to cure the sick people, to give money to those who need it, etc., etc. That's the general rule. However, this rule only applies to Jews and not to non-Jews. How do you know that? The structural, so to speak, explanation, the deep explanation to this is that God made an oath to our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and I'm being precise, these three people, and I'll explain in a minute why. He made an oath. And that oath, what does it mean? That God, because he wanted so, nothing actually forces God on anything, he wanted to be tied, so to speak, to the Jewish people in a way that when somebody does a specific action, has a specific result up there, spiritual, mystical, that actually expresses itself down here, again, in a physical way to cure the sick, etc., etc. Now, this oath, what does that mean? It means, again, that God bound himself to us because we are descendants of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the three of them. Actually, Abraham had another son, Ishmael. Actually, Yitzchak had another son, Esav. Ishmael is known as the forefather, so to speak, of the Muslims, whatever. And Esav is known as the forefather of Rome and everything that it actually represents, etc., etc. So you're going to ask me, wait a second, God made an oath to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So they also included Ishmael and Esav are also included within that oath. And the answer is no. Because our sages say clearly in the Talmud that even though Ishmael was a son of Abraham, his descendants is Yitzchak. Even though Esav is a son of Yitzchak, his descendant is Yaakov. And actually, the oath goes for the descendants of the three of them, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What does that mean, descendants? Means either mother line from Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov until today, or a person that converted according to the rules of Judaism, Orthodox, etc., etc. I'm not going to go into the details. So the point is that this oath represents God himself saying, wait a second, Isarusa dele Tatoe, if there's an awakening below, that generates Isarusa dele Eila, because an awakening from above, because God wanted this, not because of any other reason. But that does not include non-Jews. What does that mean? That when a non-Jew does something good, it means nothing? No, God forbid. I just explained before. God himself made a commandment, seven specific commandments for non-Jews, and a commandment means that God is also binding himself into this person, so to speak, to whom he is commanding. And that includes also all the ramifications to do good, do justice, righteousness in the world, etc., etc. That's fine. That's good. And there is some kind of relationship to God. But what I'm trying to explain is that all those mystical ideas and levels that the great, incredible, quote-unquote, sarcastic, kabbalistic people, mekubalim in the internet, between parentheses, if he is a real mekubal, like one of those like real ones, he's not making videos on the internet. Forget it. And that talks about me, myself. So, okay, we close parentheses. I'm not a Kabbalist. So, a Kabbalist, whatever. So, God bound himself to the Jewish people in one way. Those mystical things happened for the Jewish people. And God bound himself to non-Jews in a different way. So, those mystical things actually don't apply. So, what I'm just trying to say is, even though this is true and it hurts, It is true. So somebody has to say the truth. So don't be a fool and don't pay your life to people that offer you mystical, spiritual things that you cannot actually prove that they're true, whatever. He says he's going to pray for you if you give me money. Who knows? Whatever. What I'm trying to say is don't fall into their trap. There's nothing mystical happening when a non-Jew does a Jewish commandment. All the things written down in Kabbalah apply to Jews and not to non-Jews. And again, this is true. And again, the sources, you can see them, each one of them, in the description. And what's left for each person, for each Ben or Bas Noach, what's left is you have to be happy that you actually have a connection to God. God has commandments for you. God has a message for you. Within the Judaism, there's a message for non-Jews also. And as long as you stick to the truth, I mean, the real truth, so you have to be happy that you have a connection with eternity.